Hello and welcome to the Miko Bits show, and I'm your host, Miko Bits. And today we have Jeremy Musigi, who is coming to us from Balancer. Balancer is one of these core protocols in DeFi, and it is a very important one. So very much looking forward to getting into this. So, you know, we're going to talk about Balancer V2. We're also going to talk a bit about their recent fundraising, and you know they've done a lot, and you know I think they're about to do even more. So I guess without further ado, here's Jeremy. Hey, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here, Miko.
Wonderful. I'm very excited. So on behalf of the audience, you know, I guess the easiest thing to do is ask the question of like, what's the problem that's solved by Balancer? I know it's a pretty basic question, but I'd love for you to kind of put it into your own words, you know, and also like give us a particular lens around that question.
Sure. So Balancer serves sort of three primary groups of users who interact with the protocol. Number one is investors who use Balancer as an automated portfolio manager and a mechanism for generating yield. So you can use Balancer as a platform to deposit your crypto assets and not only deposit them, but to put them into a portfolio that is structured or designed based on specific percentages of how you want to be like holding your assets. So for example, maybe I would want to have a portfolio that's 33% BTC, 33% ETH, and 33% stablecoin, or really anything else you can think of. Balancer will automatically rebalance your positions on a regular basis. And at the same time, you'll be earning yield through the trading fees that are generated on the platform. And that is a segue into the second group, which is traders.
Yep.
So traders use the Balancer AMM as a way to trade token A for token B. Any ERC20 token is compatible with Balancer. And each time a trade is made on Balancer, it is a trade between a user and a liquidity pool. And that liquidity pool consists of tokens that belong to the liquidity providers, the investors that I just mentioned before. And so when traders make those trades, they pay a very small fee depending on the design of that pool that they have interacted with. And that fee goes to liquidity providers, which helps them grow their portfolio very passively. It's a set and forget type of tool where you deposit your crypto and you go on with your life, and it just does the work for you. And so, yeah, traders use it as a liquid market to exchange crypto assets, you know, quickly, easily, with minimal slippage and at a good price. And then the third group is the builders, the developers. Balancer is not only an exchange, not only a portfolio manager, it's really a lot more than that. It's designed with so much flexibility and customizability, and that makes it act as a DeFi primitive, a financial primitive, or a building block that you can use to create all kinds of financial products and services with Balancer, either as sort of an infrastructural layer underneath or as a protocol that is integrated in one way or another into the functionality of your protocol, you as the developer. So there's an entire ecosystem of startups, developers, entrepreneurs who are building really incredible solutions and have built very incredible solutions using Balancer.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, and obviously, you know, the very kind of core experience is probably like the exchange experience, right? And the experiencing it in the form of the AMM or decentralized exchange, right? But obviously what you're describing is that there is an entire developer ecosystem, right? That it's really a platform and that it's much more expansive, you know, and has a bunch of different applications. I guess what I'd love to understand is a little bit more about the applications, you know, so maybe you can point us to a couple examples of cool things built on top of Balancer.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff that's built on Balancer V1, which was launched in spring of 2020. And there's a lot of really cool stuff that's built on Balancer V2 and that continues to be built on Balancer V2 that was launched this month. So I guess I'll start with some of the really cool things that happened in V1.
Yeah.
And then and then if you want, we can talk about V2 either now or later.
Definitely.
So I would say like a couple examples. One that really gained a lot of traction as a use case for developers and you know crypto teams using Balancer V1 is called the LBP, the Liquidity Bootstrapping Pool. This is a configuration of a Balancer Smart Pool, which is a type of liquidity pool on Balancer, which sort of has superpowers compared to your typical liquidity pool on any AMM protocol, because it has the ability, first of all, it's controlled by a smart contract. And second of all, it has the ability to dynamically change its parameters while it's live. And you know, those are, you know, that general framework can be used in many ways, and it is used in many ways. One of them is for the LBP, which is a mechanism for IDOs, initial DEX offerings. It's a way for teams to present and offer a new token to the market through an open, fair launch sale.
And it's exciting. It's exciting because you don't need to have like a big pile of like ETH liquidity, or you don't need to have a whole bunch of stuff to get started doing that. Is that a correct understanding?
That's true. And the reason is like to give you a comparison. So the standard AMM model, which has been, you know, popularized by Uniswap, is you have a pool and it contains two tokens, and the value of that pool is divided 50-50 between those two tokens.
Yep.
And that alone is revolutionary. Balancer has kind of taken that from day one in a different direction, which is, you know, enables these flexible use cases where you can create a liquidity bootstrapping pool that starts with a certain weight. And it can be skewed as much as 98% in one token and 2% in the other token. Great. And then over the course of this token sale, which typically might be like 3 days, or it could be less or more, those weights will shift. And at the end of the sale, the 98% in this example token can end up being only 50% or 40% or whatever percentage is defined by the developer. So what does that do? That creates this mechanism where if I'm this team and I just launched my token, let's call it TKN, I create a pool on Balancer that consists of 98% TKN and 2% ETH or USDC. That means that my upfront cost to launch this token sale is only the value of that 2% of the pool, not 50% of the pool, which I would have to do if this was a 50-50 pool. So that's that really minimizes the upfront capital requirements for teams. And that's why LBPs have become one of the most, if not the most popular mechanisms for offering a new token.
That's really exciting, you know, and it's a terrific facility for accelerating innovation in the ecosystem. So, you know, thanks for offering that. I think that's super exciting.
Some other examples.
Yeah, I would love it. Yeah, please go ahead.
Some other examples. One is like a managed index fund. So you have teams like PiDAO and Techemi Capital, Brave New Coin, who have used Balancer to create these structured financial products that are very easy to interact with for the investor. on the end. And on the back end, all the complicated stuff is being handled by Balancer. And so all they need to do is, you know, create a liquidity pool on Balancer and define its parameters. And then they can package that and market that and present that in a way that is, that makes sense, that is clear, that's easy to use for their, the investors, which are their end users on the other side. And so some of the ways that this has been done is, Techme Capital and Brave New Coin created a DeFi blue chip index. And that is basically just a Balancer pool that contains a list of top DeFi tokens based on like market cap or, you know, whatever their metrics are. And you can own a diversified investment in all of those assets just by holding the pool token, the BPT, Balancer pool token,
yep,
which is basically represents your share in a pool that consists of several assets. That's how you can create an index fund on Balancer. And that's been done really nicely by several teams.
Are people doing things like treasury management with that application, or is that a separate class of application?
Yeah, treasury management is another use case as well, which I think will grow significantly as LDPs have. It's actually another smart pool configuration that's very similar to an LDP, but the difference is, let's say that, you know, my protocol has this treasury, and the treasury is largely, if not 100%, consisting of our own token. And part of your treasury objectives might be to diversify that a bit, just to diversify the risk that you're holding and to maybe hold some other assets that might be more stable. So you could define a pool where, you know, we have, you know, X percent in our token, and, you know, maybe it's like 95% to start, or even as high as 98. But we want to gradually over time diversify this into ETH, into Bitcoin, into stablecoin, and that fits our treasury strategy best based on sort of what our goals and objectives are. But we don't want to just take a ton of our tokens and start dumping them on the market right away. That would not be good. So instead, we designed this pool that gradually over a prolonged period of time can continue to shift its percentage weights, and therefore sell the project tokens for these other assets that the portfolio is in need of, and over time get into a state of balance based on the percentages that you've defined.
Super cool. And you were going to get into additional use cases around V2 as well.
Yeah, so V2, and those are just kind of a few examples of V1. We can sit here all day and talk about all of the use cases. They're kind of like infinite. But you know, V2 takes this concept of flexible pools and customizability and really takes it to another level where, you know, not only can you create these flexible pools, but you can completely customize the logic, the AMM logic for a pool that you create. So, you know, that enables us to, and enables developers to use Balancer as their sort of base layer for creating a new AMM, basically.
Go ahead.
Well, just saying that instead of building an AMM from scratch, because, you know, you need a different type of price curve for the use case, the application that you're trying to build. If you wanted to build that from scratch, not only would you have to, you know, work on the accounting and the math and sort of all of the inner plumbing to make sure this system works properly, and you'd also have to bootstrap this market and build the liquidity and all these things that are possible, but it's hard, and maybe that's not what you want to be spending all your time on. Instead, you can let Balancer handle all of that for you, and you can just design the price curve AMM logic that you want to be using, and you can deploy a pool on Balancer that follows that.
Amazing. So I was going to ask a little bit about UniV3, you know, and it sounds like you could potentially implement UniV3 style kind of price ranging, and you could basically build a similar type of LP experience on top of Balancer.
Yeah, I think Uniswap has taken a really interesting, innovative approach that is different from Balancer's approach. So I think that, you know, we'll see different types of users using each protocol in different ways. Yeah, on Uniswap, you know, you can now create these liquidity pools that where you specify a concentrated range in which the your assets will only be traded when the prices are in that range, and when they're not in that range, it's like you're not in the pool, kind of, as an LP. So that actually opens the door for a lot of like professional market making strategies to be used. The downside of that, as a lot of people feel, is that it makes being an LP actually really complicated. It's not so simple anymore. And I think one of the big reasons why people become liquidity providers, especially, you know, everyday retail investors, is that it's easy, and you don't have to be like a pro. You don't have to be a Wall Street expert. You don't have to be like a finance genius to use that and put your crypto to work and kind of focus on everything else that's going on in your life. So, you know, I think that professional market making firms are super excited about Uniswap V3. And I think that more passive investors would be more excited about Balancer V2. But I think they're both solving important problems.
Yeah, super interesting. And thanks for that characterization. So with respect to kind of V2, like you were talking about customizability, right? So that's really the core new feature in the V2 is just the customizability. I'd love to kind of get some examples of how that's being used in the wild.
Yeah, that's one of them. That's one of the features where, you know, there's custom AMM logic that you can, you know, configure. And so there are a few teams that are already using this feature, one of them being Element Finance. So like they are enabling their use case, which is sort of a different invariant that works well for like assets that converge in value over time. There's no AMM out there that can support that. Their choice was, and I don't want to speak for them, but I would imagine that their choice was, we either have to build an AMM from scratch, or, you know, then Balancer V2 comes along, and I think it solved a really big problem for them. So I think that lets them kind of get off to the races and launch their product in a lot quicker time. But that's only one thing that's new in Balancer V2. A few other things. Number one, Balancer V2 is a totally different architecture compared to V1. In V1, every liquidity pool is its own smart contract. And so anytime tokens are moved from one liquidity pool to another, there is an on-chain token transfer required. And with gas getting pretty pricey lately, that was becoming expensive. So one of the ways that the Balancer developers have kind of combated this rising gas cost is to create a single vault architecture where every liquidity pool on Balancer exists in this one vault smart contract. So moving tokens between pools is a lot easier and a lot less costly, because it's actually just moving within the same smart contract. It's not exiting.
It seems like a pretty big upgrade. It seems like that's quite a lot of effort.
This has taken a year of work, you know, to get this thing off the ground. There's countless hours of work have gone into this and just a lot of innovative thinking. So, and another thing that is enabled by the single vault architecture is internal balances. So if I'm a high frequency trader, I'm constantly trading, or if I'm an arbitrager and I'm, you know, I can use Balancer such that almost as if I have a wallet inside of the Balancer Vault. And I have my own balance inside of the Balancer Vault. So what does that mean? That means that I can make trades with any of the pools in Balancer without that actually having to come out of my wallet. Like, for example, through MetaMask, that transfer doesn't need to happen on chain. I'm actually just executing trades that are editing the accounting within Balancer, which still does require some on-chain computation, but significantly less than if it was, not structured in that way. And so you can do something really cool, which is called a flash swap. And what that means is, if I'm an arbitrager and I see that there's an arbitrage opportunity between two or more pools on Balancer, I can actually execute a trade that will take advantage of that. And, you know, I'm going to trade token A, which is in this pool, for token B, which is in this pool, and then token C is in this pool, and I'm going to receive token C, right? Or I'm going to receive, you know, the profit in token A. Instead of all of those tokens actually being traded and causing on-chain transfer functions, the Balancer protocol is just going to give me the profit at the end. It's just like, okay, you found this arbitrage opportunity, you put these pools back into balance, and here's your profit at the end. Just receive it. So
wow.
That cuts out a lot of the heavy lifting and a lot of the costs for traders. I'll mention one more thing, which is asset managers. This is a feature that really solves the problem of capital efficiency for liquidity providers. So you might not know this, even if you're an active LP in DeFi, but across all AMMs, the majority of capital that is held in a liquidity pool is dormant at all times. It's not sure. actively needed to yep. fulfill the trading activity of that pool.
Yeah.
Even if it's a pool that has a lot of trading volume. So all the LPs are sharing the yield that is being generated through the percentage of tokens that is actually being used. Let's say it's 20% that's being yep. used and 80% that's not. So what do we do with this other 80%? Maybe we can use that more productively. And so that's the idea behind asset managers. A liquidity pool on Balancer can have an asset manager which has the ability to allocate those assets that are not being used outside of Balancer into other productive use cases, such as lending through the Aave protocol. And Aave is building the first asset manager on Balancer V2, or also Yearn, which is building one as well. And there are several other teams that are jumping on this feature, so that not only are you earning what you would have been earning within the Balancer pool, but you're also earning additionally whatever comes from that extra, you know, use case or usage of that capital.
It's exciting because obviously, you know, UniV3 with the ranging function kind of is a nod towards increased capital efficiency, right? And that's pretty much what you're describing. You know, you're just describing capital efficiency as being something that's much more of an open system, right? That you can really just go out the back door and, you know, design this however you want. How does the sort of permissioning work around that? Like, that seems like a really interesting and complex topic.
So when a liquidity pool first of all, not all liquidity pools have asset managers, but sure. when a pool is deployed, it's designed and it's deployed, that's a feature that's optional. And the creator of that pool can assign a smart contract to be the asset manager of that pool. Now, wow. this, of course, creates some risk. Right, because not For only sure. are you like, if you're invested in a pool that has an asset manager, and that asset manager is being operated by some other protocol or some other developer that's not Balancer, that means that you are taking the risk that is associated with the Balancer smart contracts, which are very secure and solid and have been edited by three of the top firms. So, but there's always a risk. Right. So yep. There's not zero risk. And then whatever that other protocol is, like, you're fully also yep. Taking the risk of that, Understood. whatever that risk that runs. So that's something that is really important. And the as far as the Balancer UI goes, there will be a lot of care taken on determining which asset managers will actually be displayed on the interface of Balancer. They have to be, the most secure. They have to be audited. They have to be, the most trustworthy pools. But anyone can use that feature permissionlessly. So it is a permissionless feature to get to your question of permissioning. And so there's no, there's no restriction or centralization on that.
But it could result in an asset manager performing like a rug pull or doing kind of aberrant behavior, right? There's a
It could.
counterparty.
Right. So whoever that counterparty is, I mean, which by the way is an open source smart contract that is fully auditable. So, the rug pull, if there's a rug pull function in that contract, it can be detected by anyone who audits it, like FYI. But
Sure.
if you're not a smart contract auditor and you're not going to read every line of code, then you're basically making a decision and you're deciding whether you think that you can trust that asset
And
manager. Not
it's
only.
clear, it's clear from the front side whether there is an asset manager or not, right?
Yeah. You're not going to
Okay.
accidentally end up there.
Yeah,
We're
okay.
going to make sure, yeah, that has to be very clearly,
Yeah.
yeah.
Good. Okay, that's super interesting. And obviously it really speaks to this whole trend towards increased capital efficiency, right? And so you absolutely have to put, money to work and make it work harder and better and faster. So I'm really interested in what you were describing earlier about the single vault and sort of the record keeping, because you mentioned sort of high frequency. So when you think about like HFT applications, I guess what I'm trying to understand is I'm trying to understand. So you were saying that there's a settlement transaction, but it's sort of less intensive and less gas intensive. So I'm really trying to wrap my head around like, what the mechanics really are, right? Because I, you know, with the
Yeah.
single vault, like you have like everyone has wallets. So the question becomes sort of how does the settlement aspect work, or how does this all work?
Yeah, so you can think of it this way. You have your wallet, which is outside of Balancer, and then you have the Balancer vault. And within the Balancer vault, you have all the liquidity pools on Balancer, but then you also have this internal balance that belongs to you. It is in the vault, but it's controlled to you by you only. So when you are making high frequency trades, those trades can occur just between your internal balance and the Balancer pools, not requiring the involvement of your external balance un unless or and until you want to make a withdrawal or deposit more.
That's amazing. So in a sense, it truly is like you can truly support. In a sense, it's another kind of funny step towards kind of limit order book style behavior, right? Because in a sense, you get this kind of extraordinary, because with HFT, obviously there's like performance characteristics, right? So, presumably with this mechanism, you could make trades very quickly. So I'm trying to wrap my head around all of that. It's very interesting, right? Because when you talk about the on-chain transaction, that really is settlement, right? As opposed to thinking about everything that you do being on-chain.
Right, exactly. And it's sort of like having a layer two within layer one. Roughly speaking, not saying that it is that, but it improves efficiency of trading.
Tell me about the kind of performance characteristics. Like it feels like that would be a really important distinction, right? Because you mentioned kind of like high frequency, and you mentioned sort of similar to conceptually like layer two, so a lot of people are pursuing those types of solutions so that they can get things going really quickly. And obviously less gas, right? So those are all super important. But tell me
Yeah,
about the performance characteristics.
so the tests that we've done so far, we as Balancer Labs, just observing the performance of the platform of Balancer V2 and comparing that to the performance of Balancer V1, we have found Generally, a 33 to 40% reduction in gas costs. So, a 33 to 40% improvement in efficiency. So, I mean, major, major impact.
Yeah, that is big and amazing. Really, really interesting. So, a little bit kind of shifting gears, like how did you how did you get involved, and how tell us a little bit about your story.
Sure. My story starts. I mean, I've been an entrepreneur since I was 13, and my background in my career, sort of like the first, big venture that I co-founded was an ad tech company back in 2010. That back in the times that social media was starting to take off, and there was kind of this social media revolution going on. So, we were thinking about how will advertising work in this new world, and how can we kind of be a pioneer in creating like social advertising. So we built a platform for that. Over time, it iterated and evolved, and got acquired. And then we sold that company, that acquiring company as well. Then I started my second startup, which was a digital coaching app. So life coaching and executive coaching, kind of bringing that into the digital world, sort of being a pioneer in that space as well. Kind of when smartphones were like just able to start supporting that level of like data transfer. I was able to really grow that platform and create a big worldwide network of coaches and coaches, and ran that from 2014 to 2018, which is when that company was acquired as well. I guess now rewinding a little, that's where I was focusing the most of my energy and time. But at the same time, I had discovered Bitcoin in 2012 and had become very curious. As far as research and understanding it, and kind of talking to people, friends of mine who I thought were like my smartest friends, and seeing what they thought about it, and they all thought it was a scam. They all thought it was BS. So eventually, by the time 2013 rolled around, I think I grew the confidence to disagree with everyone and start investing. So that's when I started investing in Bitcoin and becoming a lot deeper into it. And it really became a side passion for me while I was building my startups and sort of, conducting that like consumer internet life. And I also, discovered Ethereum very early and participated in the ICO in 2014 and have just been like involved ever since. Initially, kind of as a peripheral thing, and then in 2018, I shifted my attention 100% to crypto, which was, a dream that I of mine for a long
Amazing.
time, and I was so excited that I could do that, and I manage a fund called Immutable Capital, which really grew out of those, investments back then and where they've come today, and as I've continued to actively manage the portfolio, and I joined Balancer in 2020, in September. I first discovered Balancer as an investor, sort of doing my research, my due diligence, and learning about the technology and the team, and was getting very excited about DeFi back in I guess it was sometime in the mid 2020, I guess. Have to go back and look at that, but I was an early user of like DYDX and Compound, and I was like really excited about what was going on. When I discovered Balancer, I felt like my brain exploded, and I was like so excited and fascinated by what they were building. I heard a podcast with Fernando, I think it was on Epicenter, and I was just
Yeah.
like hanging on to everyone. I was like, wow, this is amazing. So, I've always been a builder. I enjoy investing, but I think I was itching to play more of a building role in crypto, and so that kind of led one thing led to another, and eventually I joined the Balancer team to be more active and hands-on and like building this ecosystem.
Wow. That's fantastic. And with respect to kind of, it sounds like you've done a whole ton of things. Like, what would you say is your kind of superpower? Like, what's the thing that kind of you've gotten sort of the most accolades for?
That's a good question. I think that being an entrepreneur and being a CEO and COO has and just by necessity has kind of always pushed me to stretch my boundaries and like try to become as much of an expert as I can in like various different areas of a business. Because when you're, a small team, you all have to do all kinds of stuff that you might have zero experience in. So I think that has really come in handy at Balancer because I'm able to make I'm the head of growth, so I focus primarily on like partnerships as well as putting this ecosystem grant fund together and helping to direct the future of that will follow as a decentralized part of the Balancer DAO. But I also, I give a lot of talks. I'm speaking with you right now, and I give presentations, and I help society understand Balancer and DeFi. And I like to get involved in marketing. I like to get involved in our branding. I'm able to contribute in many ways. I think one of the things that I've really learned is how to communicate with and collaborate with people in different discipline areas. So like working very closely with the engineering team and like understanding their language, and then also being able to work very closely with the marketing and the branding people and the biz dev people and what have you. Or even like, the asking really tough questions to like our legal counsel when it comes to, legal questions. So yeah, I think I like to work with different people, and I feel like I can adapt to different types of conversations and projects.
That's exciting. I really appreciate that. And it's definitely, I can tell, you've sort of given yourself this sort of immersion and indoctrination. So you're sort of really deep in the machine parts, which I think is essential. So, I think that's it's this sort of autodidact polyglot type of thing that seems to be driving it. And that's great. And having the curiosity and the intensity, and it sounds to me like there's probably some stuff that you really picked up back in the coaching stuff too, right? Which is sort of self-expansion. Do you have sort of any particular advice around that or thoughts? I mean, how do you see kind of self-expansion? And obviously a coach is not even just self, right? It's not even just like you're sitting alone expanding, but you're actually getting help. So how do you see that function, that human expansion function?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most or the most important things in life, in my opinion, is like how you grow and expand as a person. And you do that through challenging yourself and embracing uncertainty and uncomfortable situations. And I think that one of the things that's like very salient for me today is this idea, this philosophy that I sort of have been developing in life. I'm also involved in martial arts. I practice Muay Thai, and I
Oh,
think I learn a
wow.
lot about life through Muay Thai as well. And one of the things that I've learned and that I've been thinking about a lot lately is, if you're a fighter, you can't succeed as a fighter unless you're willing to get hit, because the only way you can hit your opponent is if you put yourself in positions where you can get hit, and you will get hit, right?
Absolutely.
And so I think that is actually true for life in general. Whatever it is that you do, whether you're an entrepreneur or or an artist or anything you do, right? Like, because even in relationships, like falling in love, like there's a vulnerability that is required in order to take the risk that opens the door for opportunities and possibilities for growth and getting what you really want and achieving what you really want. So I think living life with a sense of trust that you can take a hit and you'll be okay is a really powerful way to live.
That's super exciting and really interesting. And obviously, Muay Thai looks to be one of the toughest martial arts. You know, like I've seen, you know, Muay Thai in Thailand, and you know, there's a ridiculous amount of toughness that goes with that territory. So hats off, I guess, is what I would say. How do you gain sort of confidence around that? Because it sounds like to me that you know, it's almost an acceptance that you're gonna get hurt, right? Like, because you know, and then the ability to kind of recover. So you know, how do you get conviction or confidence around that ability? I mean, obviously once you do it a bunch of times, but like that, you know, it seems like a, you know, difficult.
Yeah, I think, yeah, part of it is through practice and you know, feeling what it's like and seeing that you survived and that you're still okay. But yeah. I think it really comes down to the fact that if you want it, for you to get what you want, for you to get what you really want, you have to be vulnerable. You have to take risks. And also, I think there's another side to this, which is actually a very interesting part that I've also been thinking about a lot lately, which is we convince ourselves that we can avoid the pain in life, but we create these defense mechanisms to, you know, protect ourselves from that.
Yeah.
But I realize more and more that it's actually just an illusion anyway. Like, no matter how safe you think you're being, you never know what's going to happen. Life will hit you in your blind spot when you least expect it. You know, like, things will always kind of appear and come up. And so I think that the truth is you're always taking some risk and you're always vulnerable, but you can pretend like you're being safe and actually sort of prevent yourself from being in a position to grow and to receive and to achieve the things that you want, while actually still being vulnerable, if that makes sense. So you might as well just go for it.
No, this is so tremendous. It's so tremendous, right? Because I've been, you know, I've been studying Buddhism for my whole life. And, you know, to me, the thing that's so fascinating is that, like, we're largely kind of surrounding ourselves with, like, symbolic abstractions, right? Like, you know, we have primary information coming from our senses, right? But like a lot of times we're stuck in our thoughts, right? And our thoughts are really just symbolic, right? So in a sense, like, you know, in Buddhism, they say the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon, right? So in a sense, there's the world, and the world is like just crushingly large and complex and beyond, right? And so in a sense, like, the same channel through which you're open to receiving things from the world, you know, benefits, right? Is really the channel through which anything can come to you, you know, good or bad, right? So in a sense, like, you know, I think that this realization that you're espousing, that there isn't kind of safety anyway, it fits within this realm of, you know, this Eastern thought. So I definitely appreciate this idea. So tell me about kind of sources of inspirations. Obviously, the martial arts, it seems like that's a powerful one for you. Other inspiration?
Source of inspiration. I mean, I'm very inspired by the people who I interact with on a regular basis, like people who are on my team at Balancer Labs, people in the Balancer community, and then just people throughout, like, the crypto DeFi industry. I'm blown away and amazed on a regular basis by how freaking smart people are, the ideas that they're coming up with. I don't know how the hell they do it. And I'm, especially lately, I've been really, like, shocked by how young some of these people are. Like really young kids just creating unbelievable things. So I think that inspires me and excites me. And I think that it gives me a lot of like hope for the future. I think that like we're building systems in this industry that can, that will reshape society in so many ways, and can really improve sort of the way we coordinate like networks of people and how we get things done together and how we make decisions that are like fair and inclusive, and how we sort of erase like these arbitrary lines on maps that create borders, where if you're on that side, you're that kind of person, and if you're on this side, you're this kind of person, and you're not allowed to do this and you're not allowed to do that, and that person has more privilege. Like, I think this is a cryptocurrency blockchain is an incredible tool for like breaking through some of those walls.
Yeah, I love that. So it's a perfect segue for me to ask about kind of the big idea, which is, everyone has a big idea. And my classic example is Steve Jobs and personal computing, right? And so the things about the characteristics of the idea, one of the important characteristics is it wasn't solely his idea, right? So a big idea doesn't have to be like your super unique snowflake idea, like it just... it's just something that you really think is going to happen in big, and so I'd love to kind of get the big idea, like how do you see this? I mean, I think you were definitely right kind of heading into it. So I just want to hear it play out. How do you see this big journey and this big idea?
Yeah, that's such a huge question.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess like focusing on crypto, I think the big idea is it's inclusion, it's disintermediation, it's systems that promote more like freedom, safety, trust, like trust without having to trust, I guess. Trust that you're not going to get screwed, and that you don't have to be subjected to some, monopolistic set of policies or rules that, really don't value you as an individual and don't really give you a voice. So I think the idea of like networks that are governed in a decentralized structure, meaning that like by definition, every participant in the network has a voice in it, has a vote, has power, and has the ability to help shape sort of the direction and the future of that network. I think that like that just makes more sense for humanity. I think that like we've developed these centralized structures because we didn't really have a way to do to coordinate and organize at scale otherwise until now. I think that like that is actually how big of a breakthrough blockchain technology is.
Well, I think first thing I'd love to do is to do the centralization apologist dance, right? Which is yeah. Centralization is insanely powerful. Right, it's insanely powerful, right? So if you just walk around and look at stuff, you're gonna see the results of like centralization, right? We just reached the limits is the problem, right? We reached the limit. But we got a lot done. Like centralization was awesome. That was a great run. Like good job, guys. like centralization, we milked that cow. Like we took that to the max, right? So centralization, we did it. That was awesome. It worked out, right? You can't tell me centralization didn't work out. Like it worked out. Like
no,
good stuff happened.
I agree 100%.
But there is a limit.
It's not to invalidate. It's not to invalidate centralization as like this evil thing that should have never happened. It's about evolution. It's about evolving to the next iteration of like how we're going to organize our society. We did it this way for this many years, and a lot of good came out of it, but it also has these side effects that are pretty bad. And now we actually have solutions to move in a direction that can cure some of those bad side effects.
Yeah, I think things like too big to fail, that's kind of scary. Like that's scary. Sort of creating like abnormal concentrations of power, you know, that can be abused, you know. So I'm swinging back away from like centralization apologism, you know. So I definitely get it. I had this concept I called peak centralization, right, which is sort of like that's as far as the system can go, and it can't scale, right? Like we went there. There's been some pretty bad outcomes. So I'm super happy for you to paint this picture, right? Because I'm, you know, to me, and I like that you poked at this generational thing as well, right? I saw this wonderful tweet where this guy was collaborating with like a DeFi developer, and the developer said, "I can't sign your contract because I'm 13 years old," you know, which is so cool, right? And the guy had no idea. He was just like, this is just someone who's like awesome that I love to work with that's kicking ass. Like that was the entire experience up until that moment. And then it was just kind of jaw drop kind of a moment, which is what an amazing world. And, you know, so that's a world of inclusion and a world of like talent and, you know, labor mobility. And, you know, and we're really renegotiating between labor and capital. So it's fascinating. I'd love to hear your thoughts about sort of the financial system. Cause I mean, you've been in the investment side, you know, a lot on the entrepreneur side. So, you know, serial entrepreneurship, you know, so how do you see sort of the future of capital and the, you know, this kind of financial system?
I'm not a finance expert. I don't really have a finance background. Everything I know about finance is more like through the lens of crypto. a bit of, you know, learning about the traditional system as well. So I'll try to answer your question. I mean, I think that we have developed a financial system today that is clearly not serving everyone. It's serving a few a lot better than it's serving the rest.
Yeah.
And I'm also, you know, I don't want to come off as like one of these crypto utopians was like, it's all going to be perfect. Like we solved it. Like Nirvana is upon us. Like I think it's a long road. There's I think that like, there are many evolutionary steps that, you know, replacing the old financial system with something new, you know, there's a lot of steps in between. I think that what's great, one of the things that's great right now in DeFi is that there's more of a collaborative spirit, I think, between CeFi and DeFi. I think that like centralized financial institutions are recognizing. I think they're recognizing that it's best for their long-term survival to cooperate. And DeFi has like reached a point of traction and like sort of made it more clear that like this is not going anywhere. Like market can boom and bust and whatever, but like this thing is not going to disappear. So I think that cooperation is a good thing. It's going to lead to sort of a transition of evolutionary steps towards a more decentralized direction. And I think that'll just continue to grow and progress. And we're just figuring it out. We're figuring it out as we go along. Like there are a lot of like really big questions that haven't been figured out yet about like, you know, fundamentally we have the technology, fundamentally we have these concepts, like we think it can work, but there's a lot of experimentation ahead of us. We're gonna get a lot of things wrong. We're gonna learn. And, you know, eventually I'm very optimistic that it'll work out well. We'll be in a better like V2 than in V1, like so to speak. Yeah. And then V3 will be even better. It's just gonna kind of continue to evolve as humans evolve.
And we may take some hits along the way.
Gotta be willing to take the hits, but you can learn from them. Yeah. Right? You learn. I mean, the number one way that you learn how to keep your hands up as a fighter is by getting hit in the face. Yeah. You know, like I don't care how many drills you do. I don't care how many training sessions. Once you start getting busted in the nose and you feel like your nose is about to break, you're going to really learn how to keep your hands up.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I really appreciate your approach and your tone. You know, I think you've got a lot of humility for someone who's achieved a lot. And, you know, and I think you've got a great outlook. So, you know, really appreciate you spending the time.
Thanks, Miko. I really enjoyed the conversation. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, hope to see you in Miami. Thanks for coming on the show.
Looking forward to it.